Louis Farrakhan, the head of the Nation of Islam, recently returned from his tour of African and Middle Eastern countries. His trip included meetings with the heads of state of Libya, the Sudan, Iran, Nigeria, and Iraq. Supporters praised him for expanding the spirit of the Million Man March. Critics condemned him for meeting with dictators who have violated the human rights of their citizens and exported terrorism. Commentator Gerald Early has these thoughts on how Farrakhan's trip fits into the larger history of African-American interest in foreign affairs.
That Louis Farrakhan should cast a blind eye to the fact that he was visiting and endorsing countries run by cruel despots who terribly mistreat their citizens is not surprising. Part of his legitimacy for his followers, and for many black folk generally, is that he is received by heads of state as if he were a head of state. This gives many black Americans the feeling that they are indeed a country within a country, instead of merely a minority group. He is further validated by some blacks because many of the countries that received him have hostile relations with the United States. This demonstrates to his followers that he is fearless and does not care if he is censored in the United States for cavorting with the enemy. He shows that the enemies of the United States are the friends of black Americans because the United States is, to his view, the enemy of all people of color. To Mr. Farrakhan's mind, the United States is, after all, the world's most powerful white nation. Now, Mr. Farrakhan's junket is nothing new in black America. African Americans have always been interested in foreign affairs. They have tried, in various substantial and symbolic ways, to gain leverage for themselves in the United States by connecting themselves to other countries. Malcolm X traveled abroad meeting heads of state when he was both a member of the Nation of Islam and when he departed that organization. Martin Luther King was in Ghana in 1957 during its independence celebration as a special guest of Nkrumah. He was in India in 1959 studying Gandhism. King later called the civil rights movement a black zeitgeist, a harbinger of things to come. W.E.B. Du Bois held a series of Pan-African conferences approximately every 2 years, starting in 1919, trying to overthrow colonialism. In the 1920s, Marcus Garvey wanted to create a black world empire equivalent to the white world empire. There are still other ways blacks connected themselves to foreign affairs. African Americans demanded that the United States support Ethiopia when it was invaded by Italy in 1935. A group of blacks fought against Franco during the Spanish Civil War. A small but important number of African Americans, including Elijah Muhammad, the first major leader of the Nation of Islam, were persecuted during World War II for being Japanese sympathizers. They saw Japan as a colored nation fighting against whites for domination in the Pacific. There are two reasons for this international sense among blacks. First, blacks have never been permitted to feel completely a part of this country, so many have searched for another spiritual homeland. Second, other American ethnic groups, most notably the Irish, the Chinese, and the Jews, have been involved in foreign affairs for the benefit of their groups. Why not blacks? The push to end apartheid in South Africa was the African Americans' great moment of success in foreign affairs. Farrakhan's audience with Nelson Mandela was important for many mainstream blacks who so intensely identified with the South African victory. But does Farrakhan's other audiences help alter American foreign policy for the better towards sub-Saharan Africa? Definitely not. And it is time that African American leaders grow up and understand that a tyrant is a tyrant, no matter his skin color or his religion.
Gerald Early directs the African and Afro-American Studies Department at Washington University in St. Louis.